Tonight, a Greek minister, owner of Rock City Hotel, mounts fierce fight back as he demands hard proof of arm twisting, procurement breaches, shady and unholy alliance in Snit's decision to sell 60% of his stake in four top hotels to Rock City.
Wherein lies the strong words of a shady meeting, bizarre preferential treatment, and unholy alliance.
We'll hear from organized labor as lead whistleblower and MP for Nok Tong Samokujeta Blakwa insists Rock City Hotel is not only paying the estimated market value in the latest deal, but has enjoyed preferential treatment from SNIT in past transactions.
Is Top Story with Evans Mensah.
Well, the storm surrounding Snit's decision to sell 60% of his stake in four top hotels isn't calming down anytime soon. Today, the Greek minister who owns Rock City Hotel, Brian Champon, has been fighting off claims he is the beneficiary of arm twisting, procurement breaches, and shady alliance with the trust in the latest controversial deal. He insists there has been no conflict of interest regarding his work as an MP and a director of his hotel, claiming he does not hold an office of profit at Rock City that will require him to obtain a certificate from the Speaker of Parliament before proceeding with the purchase of the stakes. A practice, he says, most of the minority MPs are currently engaged in.
I'm not occupying an office for profit in Rock City, and I am not receiving
a
monument.
But you are the director.
But
you are the director.
I am the non. No.
From the corporation,
hold on.
You are the director.
If you go to, hold on, be patient, please. If you go to Register General, the forms ask for two directors. I am one director and another person. But in the functional role that I will receive emoluments or occupy an office for profit in the organization, or my activities in the organization will prevent me from doing my work at in parliament or as a minister, does not come in. So being a director as per Registrar General's documentation and functioning as a non-executive director in the functional role are two different things. So Sami, you don't, and I have all the list of the NDC MPs who own shares in companies but don't have certificates from the Speaker because of their roles in these organizations.
So that there is Brian Champon clashing today on the Super Morning Show with the MP for Nok Tong, Samokujeta Blakwa, who first raised this issue and has filed the petition with SHRAJ, the Commission on Human Rights and Administrative Justice. Now, he insists that Brian Champon has breached the law because he is the owner of the Rock City Hotel and stands to benefit from the profits made from the hotel.
I've checked all of that, and you see in the petition
that I'm a manager.
That all of these matters, I'm clear in my mind that you should have sought permission of Mr. Speaker. So it is a matter that SHRAJ is seized with. SHRAJ will make the final determination. It's not about
but
your call.
I'm saying that
other
MPs may be in
your position
other
and
that,
they
I
have
will
not applied
to
the Speaker.
Does not
absolve you.
Well, as you may well know by now, the Minister's Hotel had been selected as a winner of a bid to purchase the 60% stake in these four top hotels. Now, organized labor, led by the TUC, they have vowed to resist the deal and have warned of a street protest if government does not cancel the transaction. Today, Samokujeta Blakwa made further allegations against Brian Champon, who was on the call with him on the Super Morning Show, including revealing past transactions with SNIT, in which he alleges that Brian Champon received preferential treatment. The Greek minister categorically denied that.
So it is not for the Honorable Brian Champon to determine that there has been no breach. If you look at the letter from the lawyers of the minority shareholders, Vanep Company Limited and Ahoy Plaza Limited, dated 10th May 2024, the litany of breaches are enumerated, and I have attached these letters from the lawyer to the petition. So again, try to make that determination. It is not for the Honorable Brian Champon to make a decision and to say that there has been no breach. If you look at the letter that I am referring to, no shareholders meeting has been held to discuss the sale of SNIT shares in Rich Royal Hotel. So there are a litany of breaches which violate the 1999 shareholders. I have made the point about lack of due process, about how the whole procurement process appears to be skewed towards a particular outcome. This is a major evidence in building that case. So it is not about defending any shareholder. I don't have any interest in this matter. I'm not defending any shareholder. Yeah, Kojo, I have also stated in the petition that SNIT and Rock City appear to have an unholy alliance. If you pay regard to the transaction in 2022, where SNIT offloaded 25% of its shares to Rock City in the Grand Regency Hotel, and you observe what happened in that transaction, how Rock City was not made to pay the actual value of the 25%. The 25% of SNIT's shares was valued at 8.6 million Ghana cedis at the time. And yet, in a bizarre preferential treatment, Rock City was allowed to pay below value, 7.4 million. And even that, from my whistleblowers, Rock City was then later on allowed to pay an installment. So one refused to pay the value, the actual value of 8.6 million. They said they would pay 7.4 million. Even that, they are paying in installment, and they also refuse to peg the transaction to the dollar. SNIT had made that recommendation, and Rock City refused, if you read the minutes of that meeting which I've put out. And I have made the point that if you look at this history, there is no way we will be guaranteed value for money. Already, there are issues to do with the valuation. The properties department of SNIT was not allowed to carry out its internal valuation. The recommendations from the transaction advisor are not being followed in this
transaction. Which one are you talking about? You are obfuscating the issues. If we are talking about the Kumasi, can we deal with it? Then you can come to another.
Yes. So Kumasi is important because
I'll deal with it.
If we can hear the full question from Mr. Ablakwa, then we can hear the full
because
answer from Mr.
Because what he's trying to do in propaganda, we call it stacking. Okay, you bring a matter that is not true, and you continue to repeat it until it
I take strong exception to that. Mr. Champon, you are on the same platform.
You will have the opportunity to respond. So please bear with us and let's hear the full submission of Mr. Ablakwa. Then we'll hear the full response from you. Okay, so Mr. Ablakwa, please complete your point.
So Kojo, I'm talking about the Kumasi transaction, the Grand Regency Hotel transaction, and I have the offer letter of Rock City dated 14th April 2022, paying below value. Instead of paying 8.6 million, they were allowed to agree to pay 7.4 million and allowed to pay that in installment. And I've also produced the minutes of negotiations leading to that shortchanging of Ghanaian workers dated Wednesday, 16th March, 2022. And these are all contained in my petition to Shiraj. And I have made a point in that petition that this is what raises concern and it worries all of us. And at yesterday's press conference, you noticed that the TUC has begun raising those issues, confirming my fears that the MOU that they have cited, their reps on the board have told them that, again, Rock City is being given preferential treatment. They are going to be allowed to pay in installments and all of that. We are not going to have value for money. So you see a consistent pattern right from Kumasi coming to this six hotels transaction. And it's one of the major issues I have.
Mr. Champo.
I don't think Rock City has extensively on the Kumasi transaction. The company, the Smith Hotel in Kumasi, was divested to a particular person who had a private individual who had maintained 75 shareholding for more than 30 years. Rock City, I'm told, wanted to expand to Kumasi, have a presence in Kumasi. So they approached the private sector person and asked to buy his 75% shares in the hotel. The private sector person wrote to Smith, giving Smith the first right of refusal because they want to offload their shares. Smith said they were not interested because for 30 years, they have not received a penny from that hotel in Kumasi. Pensioners have not received one kobo, one peswa from that facility in Kumasi. So they are not interested in buying the 75% shares. Now, the Rock City now went ahead and agreed with a private sector person to pay $3 million for 75% shares in the company. The private sector person, they paid him $3 million. At the time, the transaction was pegged to the dollar. Now, when they finally got the shares and now became a majority shareholder, by acquiring the interest of the majority shareholder, with the private sector person, it's J. Stanley Owusu, that is the name. He's a big waste management contractor in Kumasi, and everybody, those who know him, know him. Anyway, when Rock City became a majority shareholder in that company, they now approached Smith that we have acquired, and you are aware, 75% shares in this company. We want to buy your shares. So they entered into negotiations. And the most fairest negotiation was that, I'm told, that Rock City then presented what they paid to the private sector person, that we paid $3 million. So it would be fair that we pay 25% at $1 million, Rock City tells me. So they went ahead and offered in the negotiations $1 million. At the time, the $1 million that they offered was 7.1 million Ghana cedis to the dollar. So they went into the negotiation and Smith accepted the offer of $1 million pegged to at 7.1 million Ghana cedis. Then when Smith, after 2 months, when they wrote to Rock City, the figure had moved from 7.1 to 7.4 because the dollar rate had increased. At the time, the Rock City said, in the letter that Sami Okudeto is holding, says that we negotiated at 7.1, but in writing to us, you have increased it to 7.4. But notwithstanding, we accept because they knew the background that Smith had pegged it to the dollar. Now, their valuation of 8.9 million is what they have on their books. But notwithstanding the value that you have on your books, if you want to sell an asset, you go and negotiate. So if the private sector person had been offered at $3 million and accepted, and which is for every 25% share is equivalent to $1 million, and Smith is also offered the same $1 million, wherein lies the short changes? So the fact that you have a value of an item at 8.4, and you go into negotiations and achieve 7.4, because the benchmark on the market is really what the private sector person had offered, at least at the barest minimum. Wherein lies the strong words of a shady meetings, bizarre preferential treatment, and an unholy alliance.
And that there's Brian Champon. He is your Greek minister and owner of Rock City Hotels. And you want to catch the full interview on our social media platforms. It was live on the Super Morning Show today. Here on Top Story, we'll be speaking to lawyer Kweku Pensil. We'll also hear from the TUC and also try and get understanding of the fundamental pillar of Samokujita Blackwell's petition to Shraj, which is that the Brian Champon may have breached a constitutional provision that required him not to hold an office of profit. Stay with us. And to that question, I want to bring in the chairman of the Privileges Committee in Parliament, Mr. Joe Sowusu. Mr. Sowusu, thanks for the time. You're on Top Story.
Thank you for holding me.
Great to have you. And this is a very controversial, fast-moving story. One of the key issues that has emerged has to do with something that normally your committee, the Privileges Committee, will deal with. And it revolves around Article 78 of the Constitution, also repeated in Article 98 of the Constitution. I want to read 98, which squarely has to do with the MPs. It says, a member of Parliament shall not hold any office of profit or emolument, whether private or public, or either directly or indirectly, unless permitted to do so by the Speaker, acting on the recommendations of a committee of Parliament on the grounds. And that committee traditionally has been the Privileges Committee, on the grounds that one, A, holding that office will not prejudice the work of a member of Parliament, and B, no conflict of interest arises or will arise as a result of the member holding that office. Today in this exchange on the Super Morning Show, it came out, Brian Champon rejects a suggestion that indeed he is in breach of this clause. First, are you aware if in his position as a director of Rock City, he has filed and notify the Speaker and sought the certificate, which may have been referred to your committee?
Unfortunately, my committee, the Privileges Committee, is not in charge of the Office of Profit. There's a specific committee created under Order 224 of New Standing Orders to deal with application for Office of Profit. That committee is chaired by the second deputy speaker. So I'm not aware, unfortunately, I haven't seen any report to the House in which the honourable member has applied to be granted permission to be occupy an office of profit
under the new standing orders. But give me your thoughts on this, considering your experience on this matter in the past. Now he reads out this particular clause, and he says fundamentally that because he is a director, he doesn't necessarily hold an office of profit, and therefore this particular provision will not affect him. What do you say to that?
Is that your understanding too? Fact to be determined by the committee, which is it the Shraj, which are here, the matter has been referred to. The law is clear. What the Constitution says, you have read it. What the standing orders say are clear. You apply to the committee, they will interview. If they are satisfied that one, the office you take will not interfere with your work as a member of parliament and that there's no potential conflict of interest if you're a minister or a deputy minister, then they'll recommend to Mr. Speaker to approve and grant you permission to hold that office. But as to whether, in fact, the Honourable Member, the Honourable Bernard Sampong, being a Member of Parliament, being a director of a company per se, entitled him to earn profit, I think it's a matter of fact to be determined. Let me confirm this before somebody raises it. I'm a 100% shareholder of a small company I've just called. It's called Amansian Suma Hotel Limited. A small thing. I don't receive any emoluments. Do I need to apply to the Speaker? I don't think so. So as the facts are, I think, should determine whether there's any profit and whether the Honourable Member should apply to the Speaker for
permission to be to hold that office.
And you've chaired the Privileges Committee before, and when accusations are made about members of Parliament, such as you are in a conflict of interest situation, you'd expect the Privileges Committee then to be seized with the matter. On this subject of conflict of interest, I wonder what circumstances can you deem a member of Parliament to be in one?
Well, first thing is that in applying for the Office of Profit Commission, you have to tell the committee what is the profit about. What business is that office you're seeking to occupy, or you're seeking permission to occupy? What business does it engage in? Is there a likelihood that that business would in any way be a business that would have something to do with the work of Parliament as in our supervisory role of the executive? These are likely to be the questions. In my first term in Parliament in 2009, I applied and I was granted permission to practice as a lawyer, a private legal practitioner. It was determined that there's no likelihood of conflict of interest by the committee. So I think they are all questions of fact to be determined. Even the application, to look at the scope of work you will be required to do or you'll be applying to do in the whatever business or office you're seeking to occupy.
You raised the point about, and that is Brett Champon's point too, that yes, I am a director. Yes, I am the shareholder in Rock City. And he comes to the conclusion you also raise in your own instance, which you say you also are 100% shareholder in an entity. He says because of that, that provision does not necessarily apply to him. I want to bring in the thoughts of a lawyer, Kweku Pencil, on this particular side, because it's come up now. Some say it's a grey area possibly that needs to be clarified even further going forward. Lawyer Pencil, thanks for your time on this particular subject. Where do you stand on this? If you are a member of Parliament and you are a shareholder, 100% shareholder, like we've just had Joseph also articulate for himself, will this particular provision affect you? Would you then need to then apply because you may be construed as an office of profit?
On this issue, you are a shareholder, and do you also say it's a director?
Yes, he says he's a director.
Yes, if it's a director, the director of a company. And if you're a member of a company and you're also a member of the government, naturally, I mean the room, the space for doing business must be left free to avoid even all suspicions. But as a matter of law, I will conclude that if you are a director shareholder of a company and with a company that seeks to do business with a government or a part of government, then you are caught in a conflict of interest situation. And there's no way that you can carry it by mere reason of the fact that maybe you are not actively. Well, a director is a director. Even if you're not paying the director who's not salary, you still got an interest in the affairs of the company. You do not take active direct interest in the affairs of the company. But conflict of interest is a kind of situation where there's a likelihood of that possibility. That is what we're seeking to avoid. We don't wait for you to get into the actual groove before we begin to talk about conflict of interest. So I don't buy the argument that they're making that he's not caught in a conflict situation. He's caught in a conflict situation. And you know, in most of these things, except that in these places we don't give a lot of, I mean, we don't care a lot about some of these things. But like Caesar's wife, he might be about suspicion. That's a ground rule for this area of what do you call it, of doing business. In other words, don't into the frame at all.
Hopefully we can get a better connection if you can reposition briefly. But you're making a point about if you are a shareholder and a director. But what if you are just a shareholder? Will that still apply to you?
If my shareholder, you've got an interest in the progress, in the business, in the interest. Even being a shareholder alone is sufficient, because I mean, with respect, this is Africa. This is Ghana. And being a shareholder of a company, that you have an interest in the welfare, the growth, the development of the company. And that is the main attraction. Of course, being a director means the directing mind. But being a shareholder of a company that does business, and it's even worse when you're 100% shareholder. 100% shareholder, this is more like the director mind. It is not being a director of the company. And when it's a director of the company, it's worse. So, I mean, the argument, the kind that they're playing that we're a shareholder, we're a director, and therefore it doesn't matter. I won't buy it. As a matter of law, you're a shareholder.
Unfortunately, because of the connection, but I think he makes the point there about whether you're a shareholder or you are not. He believes that particular clause is something that will apply to you, where the constitution says a member of parliament shall not hold an office of profit. So that's where the controversy is right now. You've just heard his thoughts on this subject.
Interpretation of law is always a question of opinion. But first, is a shareholder an office? The role that you're seeking or to hold an office of profit.
Hi, Mrs. Oso, I believe you may have a radio on, a radio set on. If so, can you please turn it off? I'm getting feedback.
Not from here, not from my
office. Okay,
I'm
not from you. Okay. Please proceed.
So what I'm saying is that being a shareholder and an office, I wonder how you can interpret that to be an office. You're seeking an office. An office necessarily for doing an administrative work, being part of an administration and management. So you cannot just interpret the work without the context in which the article is stated. You're seeking an office of profit. So you're taking an administrative or a managerial position. But being a shareholder in a company which may not be, ever make profit, that's not, I don't think it places you within this, this article in the Constitution. And then as to whether or not you do business, let me use my a man's sense as an example. We call it a mountain so much, events and lodging. It's largely for outdoor and indoor events. I don't know how government interest will play out at the Dubai. For me to have a conflict of interest. So the facts and the business of the company, I think, will determine whether the conflict of interest would arise. But that's circumstances often considered by the committee when the application is made to it.
And since I have you on, in this particular case, in this instance, you have a cabinet minister who owns Rock City, says he's a director there, and now is about to buy 60% stake in four top hotels belonging to SNIT. Questions have been raised about his conflict of interest, but also the propriety of doing that. They are legitimate questions, are they not? Considering who he is.
I think focus should be one, this is not a person to buy it. From what I've read, if that is true, then SNIT offered to sell and they are the person. So, what question left to be answered is there value for money? If you ask me, that is the only issue to be determined. If there's no value for money, then you may suggest that somebody may have been engaged in some underhand business. In that case, who is negotiating on behalf of the SEC? Who has influence and can influence the other persons on the other side? You know, of course, that's a legitimate reason, argument. But beyond that, I think that we are expecting doing business in this country way beyond what my view is that, if I recall correctly, there was a company called State Hotel Corporation or so, which was the national company holding all the big hotels in Ghana. Right, they were all pulled out in the late
70s, early 80s. None of them would be able. We should be interested in who inspired the state asset if it becomes necessary.
Yeah, I mean, and if we can reposition slightly, because I'm struggling to hear you, but you make a point about the only question that remains to be answered is whether there is value for money. But surely, if you have a minister of state with the influence and clout that he has, now seeking to do business, in fact, by 60% stake in SNIT, which, as you know, the head of SNIT is appointed by the president too, that influence, that background that he has there, definitely will hold sway in that transaction. At least there will be a suspicion.
Definitely will.
No, well, I'm rephrasing. Or yeah. At least that people will suspect. And you know, conflict of interest is not only what actually happens, it's what it seemed to happen, right? I mean, isn't that why, morally, ethically, this is something that should not happen? If you're looking at a code of conduct for public office?
Are you suggesting that because I'm in public office, and because, notwithstanding that I am in this business, if there's an opportunity to sell a state asset that plays within the same business, I can't offer a legitimate and appropriate fee to acquire it? I think that we are stretching this public office holding thing beyond reasonable limits. All that matters is that thing was offered for sale by SNIT itself. Is there a value for money? If you ask me, that is the question that we should be focused on. Whether it is bought by A or B or C, or what work A or C or B buys, should arise only if we determine that the price is grossly undervalued.
Okay. Thank you very much. Also, Wusu there is the first Deputy Speaker of Parliament and Chair of State Privileges Committee there. I want to bring in the TUC now. And now we've heard from Brian Champon himself. But TUC yesterday held a press conference to say they want that particular transaction cancelled. That transaction, according to SNIT, is not complete yet. They are still in negotiations, although Rock City has been selected because SNIT says they offered the best bid. So, is TUC, having listened to Brian Champon, now in a position to say maybe they want to step back a bit? I want to bring in Nayele Adefio, etc., who, of course, is in charge of PR and campaigns at TUC. Thank you very much now for your time here on Top Story. And very quickly, we just heard this morning from Brian Champon. He denies that there have been any underhand dealings, there have been procurement breaches, and that all this was above board. You still stand by your position as articulated at that press conference yesterday?
Interestingly, organized media held a meeting this afternoon, and their stand is they want a hearing by the President of the Republic of Ghana. Because I think so many.
Sorry, when you say you want a hearing, as in a commission of inquiry?
They want a meeting.
A meeting.
When you look at NIDS, you look at government, you look at labor, you look at employers. You know, so it's just like the couple of nights. So there must be a meeting to look at the issue. And so, I mean, I guess if you are privy to the issue of state, you would want to defend your stand as much as possible. Maybe it's not an underhand dealing, but for me, it's problematic. I won't go into those details, but I think what organized labor is saying is that for a period now,